ready to turn right? Yeah. Just lost you rockin'! Wow!
Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City. And with me this week is Mr. Jody Havnot.
Hello.
And with us this week is D-Rock.
What's happening, guys?
What's up,
D-Rock? We're doing all right. D-Rock. So how's the weather up there? Is it getting cooler?
Yeah, but it's like perfect. Perfect right now. It's like not too frigid, but not hot at all. Got the windows open.
Yeah, it's like 68 degrees right now.
Perfect.
Yeah. We're down here. It's about probably about 77, 78 in the day, and then in the 50s at night. So my electric bill should be near zero.
That's what I'm talking about, man. I haven't been running my AC lately either, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, as soon as I have my whole house is electric, I don't have gas, anything. So the minute I have the opportunity to turn that shit off, I do it.
Hell yeah.
Hey, listen, before we get started, don't forget to go to iTunes and leave a review. And, you know, I just wanted to say one more thing. If you get the opportunity, we got the holidays coming up. Go shopping on Amazon through Podcast Rock City. If you do that, that helps us. It gives us a few bucks for everything you order. If you're going to get a computer, go through Podcast Rock City. It gives us a few bucks, and it helps us pay for the podcast. You know, I don't really want to say it. I feel uncomfortable talking about that. But anyway, we're definitely not making any money.
All right.
Okay, so I have some news.
Podcast Rock City News.
I was looking at it just a little while ago. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was October 2nd, this day in history, the solo albums are certified gold and platinum. All right, so let me ask you this, because this is, do you think that the solo albums helped or hurt their career?
I'd say all in all, it kind of hurt them.
Hurt them, huh? Yeah. Instead of doing those solo albums, they should have maybe taken a little time off and then regrouped and did a new album, or?
Right. I think it would have made a big difference had they maybe taken a small little break, and then everyone talks about that, the 78 album that never was but could have been, and I think it would have been pretty cool. You know, I think that the solo albums further splintered a group that was already kind of splintered, you know what I mean? It just made it worse.
Right.
And then it also kind of divided the Kiss fan base, because most people didn't like most of the records, at least 50% of them. You know what I mean? Most people kind of liked Paul's and Ace's, and that was about it.
Right. On the average.
Yeah. No, obviously there's people that like all of them or liked Gene and Peter more than Paul and Ace, I think. But, you know, I think most people like me, I got Gene Simmons's first and was completely devastated. You know what I'm saying? It's like that was like the death knell for the demon character in my mind, you know?
It just was so not the demon.
Right. And I, you know, I've grown to appreciate the record, but at the time, I thought it sucked horribly when I first got it. You know what I mean?
What about you, D-Rock?
I agree with Jody, but I think it kind of helped a little bit, but not so much as the basis of helping the band Kiss itself. I mean, I think, you know, they should have just taken a break, you know, and not done any damage, you know, to where the solo albums, in a way, you know, I agree with Jody, in a way it kind of hurt them a little bit, you know, but yet at the same time, I mean, if you listen to them, you know, I mean, you kind of get an appreciation for each one of their style, in a sense. I mean, you got to hear Peter Criss's style, when you go back and you listen to Kiss as a whole, you know, you kind of get a little bit more of a deeper appreciation for each of their playing styles, you know. But, I mean, as far as it goes, hurting them, yeah. I mean, because Gene had that whole, the demon, you know, the evil look aspect, you know, and then he's doing Wish Upon a Star, you know, or something, you know, from Disney. You know, it's just like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
Sure.
But, I mean, but all in all, I mean, it really, I think it really helped Paul out a little bit, though, because, I mean, his album was the most kick-ass of them all, and I still listen to it to this day all the time. But yeah. All in all, as a whole, speaking about Kiss, I think it kind of hurt him, you know? So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was sitting back and thinking about it today when I saw that this anniversary came up, and I was thinking, you know, people should appreciate the risk that Gene and Peter took. Paul and Ace were really in a comfort zone as far as, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't, you know, they went, instead of doing what I normally do, I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, so in the end, I kind of go, even though I'm not a huge fan of the, you know, Gene's album, or I like Peter's album, but that's because to me it's a different style of music. I don't like it because it's let's say, how can I say this and make sense? It's not, I like it because it's old style rock and roll, and I kind of dig that stuff, you know?
Right.
But as if it was a Kiss record, I'd be highly disappointed, you know, but it's not, it's a Peter Criss record, so. But, you know, for me, I do think that it hurt him. I wish they would have just maybe, you know, taken a vacation apart from each other, you know. Yeah. I mean, obviously they did that with these records, but still they were, you know, it wasn't a vacation. Take some time off. They've been going hardcore since 74, you know.
Yeah.
If they'd have just taken some time off, it might have, you know, they might have sat back and went, oh, I really missed the guys, you know.
Totally.
And another thing I think that kind of hurt them, in a sense, too, was, you know, I mean, if they were going to do them as solo albums, they should have just done it as solo albums. You know, they shouldn't have labeled it anything to do with Kiss. Because I think a lot of people, you know, that didn't really know Kiss at the time or whatever, when they did get those albums, they were relating it to sort of being like four separate Kiss albums, and I think that kind of hurt their reputation a little bit too, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it really helped Ace, though. You know, I mean, after the solo records, Ace was confident in himself, and it's kind of a double-edged sword because he was confident enough to eventually leave the band, but also it was kind of cool that after the solo records, you got more than one song on an album by Ace. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. That was the thing.
He has songwriting, you know, capabilities, you know.
Yeah.
Right. You know, basically what they did was they went, oh, you know, you write hits.
So let's put some more of your songs on Dynasty and Unmasked, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked that. We've done so many shows on the solo albums. But, all right, so here's another one. Now, this was from a couple of days ago, September 30th, 1984. Kiss opened their Animalize tour in England with Bruce Kulick on lead guitar, who was filling in for the ill Mark St. John. Bruce Kulick became an official member of the band December 8th, 1984. If you think about that, man, it's like October, November. He toured with them for 2 months before they said, oh, you're the guy.
You're the guy. Know?
You're the guy. Now, as far as the Animalize album goes, you know, that tour really isn't really what I want to talk about. I want to kind of go back to the same subject that we were talking about with the solo albums. How important do you think that MTV concert was?
I think it was huge. I know it was to me, you know.
Yeah, I think that really boosted them right back up, you know, to where they needed to be in the first place.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of people that have kind of forgotten about Kiss. You know, all of a sudden, Lick It Up comes out. They're mildly popular again. But then that Animalize Live and Uncensored comes on MTV, and it aired a lot, you know. And I think a lot of people got to see that these dudes could play their asses off still, you know. Because to me, that concert is smoking. It could have easily been a Live 3, you know.
Yeah. And if you also, you know, getting people the opportunity to see them live out of the makeup, they see that the show is still energetic and the crowd is into it and they're still there, and you know what I mean.
Yeah. And it shows, and they're playing better than ever, really.
And like what Jody said, you know, also, you know, I think a lot of people think, you know, like after that, you know, with the whole solos thing, you know, I think people were starting to think that they were getting weak and that, you know, they were just losing it, you know, and that, you know, they weren't going to be able to come back from it or whatever. But when they did that show and came out and just completely whooped ass on the stage and just owned it, I think people are like, oh, wow, okay, they really didn't lose it. They're still rocking it. So, you know, just kind of like recharged their batteries, I think, with the public eye, you know, and totally. With the fan base.
Totally. And it was like they were a lot heavier. Like a lot of the songs are faster and obviously more gain on the guitars. I don't know. For me, I played that Animalize Live and Uncensored to death, dude. I saw it on MTV, and then I saw it in a... There used to be this place called BAC Video, right? I used to rent it, like, every weekend. And then finally, for my birthday, my mom bought me the damn thing. And I shit you not, I watched it every single day for years.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
We used to cruise around in my car, and we used to blare that thing all the time with Charlie.
Yeah, I made like a cassette version of it.
Still. Yeah, everybody made that cassette. It was Live 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude.
You know, everybody made a copy of it, you know, and I'll tell you something really funny, but just recently, one of my buddies, out of nowhere, he just decided to sell his Kiss collection, and I mean, it's huge. And I showed up at work one day, and he was like, hey, I have all these, you know, cutouts and pullouts from magazines, and I'm not going to do anything with them, so just take them. And one of them was the ad from Animalize Uncensored. That thing was $30.
Yeah, at the time it was kind of expensive.
That's a lot of money. And then I know I've mentioned it probably about a year ago, or it might have been a little less, but it feels like about a year ago, Karen and I were in a record store, and I found Animalize Live Uncensored on VHS, which was really cool.
Right.
You know, the original box and everything. I was so excited about that.
With like the hand ripping through and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. It's so funny. But for me, I think, you know, I think that was one of those things that was huge. My buddy Wayne and I used to go to the Blockbuster because they had it at Blockbuster, and we went every weekend and rented it and then sat at his house.
Hell yeah.
And we watched it, you know, and then he had pictures that he took from like the Dynasty tour, you know, in like a photo album. So while they were playing, we'd be flipping through that and looking at the pictures. And cool. He told me, hey, you see this picture right here, man? I snapped it just like a second late. But like Ace's guitar shot fireworks out right after right before I took the picture. And seeing those pictures, you know, it's pretty amazing, you know. And I can still remember, you know, just listening over and over. And it was just such a great experience as a kid, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was completely, like, competitive with what was going on at the time. They were just as heavy as anybody else, you know?
Oh, yeah. Just a really great band, and I think Bruce made them even better.
I do, too. Like I was saying, I think that's the best they had probably sounded since probably 78 live, you know?
Yeah. And I'm not even sure, because I can't remember, but I'm not even sure I knew because... that Bruce was in the band at the time. I think I found out by watching the concert.
Wow.
It was one of those things where, you know, if you didn't pick up a magazine, you didn't know what was going on, and I didn't always have money for magazines, you know? And so I think when I saw it, I was like, who's this guy? You know? But anyway, one last news thing, and I'm only bringing it up because everybody's talking about it, and that's Eddie Trunk.
What's he up to? I don't even know.
Eddie Trunk is pushing the rumor of Ace Frehley getting back in Kiss in 2017.
He must listen to KST.
Yeah, he must listen to them, and FAQ was talking about it. So, as a matter of fact, it was really weird because I went on this Facebook site, and somebody said, hey, FAQ's talking about Ace getting back in the band. and I haven't heard anybody else talking about it. Have you heard anybody else talking about it? I was like, for real, dude?
Jeez.
We've been doing shows about this for 6 months. Anyway, so now Eddie Trunk's talking, and of course, video has come out of Gene at that Q&A that I was at in Virginia,
okay,
where the guy asked, are you ever going to have a you know, all the original members back in the band?
And he said, no.
No. Now, here's the thing.
But just Ace isn't all the original members.
Okay, so that's where we're going. I don't want... Okay, this that was... Gene is like a lawyer. He knows what he can say and what he can't say.
Right.
And he knows that if somebody asks him, are all the original members getting back together? He can say, no way in hell. And it could be true.
Right.
Because Eric Singer on the drums doesn't make it all. Now, is this going to happen? I don't know. But what I'm saying is that, you know, he still isn't answering the question. You know, he did mention that Ace and Peter have had three chances to be in the band or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I guess you see what I'm saying. We're just, you know, but also they were saying that Ace has got shows booked in 2017, which he does. So... is this more of a, hey, Ace is going to go on tour with us in 2017, you know, playing with us, not on stage, but like his band will play with our band and, you know, and we'll, and it'll be cool. He'll walk on stage. Or is this going to, you know, that these are going to be the things that the questions that people want answered, you know?
Right. I mean, it could go either way, you know, really.
Dude, I heard, I think it might have been on the Kiss FAQ podcast this week where, I think Julian had said that Gene has finally announced that the Expos are going to go, you know, like a full-blown tour in the States again.
Like,
I'm pretty sure that's where I saw it, but how cool is that? Another convention tour. I loved that back in the day. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, now you see, that makes a lot of sense.
But would Ace, I mean, if it was like the convention before, would Ace, I wouldn't want Ace to just come back and do some acoustic set in a hotel somewhere, you know? I'd rather see the full-blown Kiss show.
The full show, not just a little private, you know, show thing acoustically.
Exactly. But, like you said, maybe he's just going to be part of that expo tour, as they're calling it or whatever, and maybe Ace's band will kind of fill a slot where like a tribute band might have back in 95, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
But I can't see Ace wanting to do that because it is kind of like... a downgrade to him, really. You know, it's kind of like a little bit disrespectful in a way.
Somebody was posting live video through this weekend of Ace's show. I think he was in Connecticut or something. And, it sounded really good. His solo, I wouldn't have been all that thrilled with. But, I mean, I wasn't there, and if I'd have been there, it might have been different. But anyway... That we just have to keep waiting. We just, you know, in 2017, going, huh? We'll see what happens. You know, one other thing, I did hear some people talking about the cruise coming up next month. Now, listen, this is really important because I want all you guys that are listening to know what's going to be going on with me. Yes, I'm on the boat. Yes, I will be posting video as often as I can to podcastrockcity.com and the Facebook page as often as I can. I have purchased the data package in order for me to do that while I'm in Mexico and the Grand Cayman Islands.
Right on.
And I'm going to purchase a package so when I'm on the boat and things are happening, I can figure out a way for you guys to see some video, at least, you know, maybe some interviews.
Cool.
You know, I'll walk around with my camera constantly, you know. I really have a dream that, I know this is going to sound silly, but I want to interview King's X really bad, and I have to talk to Rachel Bolan. He's one of my heroes, just because he's crazy. Anyway, so that kind of stuff. But the thing that I did hear this week, a couple of things. One, Paul's paintings are going to be on display.
Awesome.
On the boat. Yeah, I think that's cool. I've never had the opportunity to do that. Now, the other thing was somebody posted, hey, Paul's paintings are cool. I really hope they have a smaller version of the tank on the show. And somebody said, Sixth Man has already said, no tank.
No, really?
Yeah. Now, I haven't personally seen that. But.
I guess you'll find out in about a month, huh?
Well, I'm thinking that I'm going to call them tomorrow and ask.
Oh, yeah? Well, how are they going to know?
Well, Sixth Man is the company that, you know, is putting it on.
Yeah, but you see, Kiss has already said, this is what the stage design is.
I would imagine that I would imagine it has to be ready a long time before.
I know for sure Paul's playing the leopard guitar. Like, he keeps tweeting photos of him with it, you know.
Constantly, yeah. All right, so those are the things going on. You know, if there's no tank, I guess I won't be too disappointed. I want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the centerpiece of that whole tour, you know?
Yeah, the creatures, yeah. Okay, so.
Podcast Rock City, topic of the week.
This week, our main topic is boom!
Boom! Boom, boom! Boom, 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 boom!
You should put that in right there.
Boom, boom! Boom,
okay, boom, I'll do that, boom. Sure.
Sonic Boom.
Boom!
Now, I will tell you that I have honestly only listened to this record maybe 5 times.
I think you got me beat then.
Really?
Me too.
I'm up to 3. 3's my, and the third one was today, and I couldn't even make it through most of the songs.
Now, let me ask you this, because I don't really want to do a track by track.
Yeah, I don't either.
Because, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't know how other people feel. It's not, and once again, the fact that I don't like this record has nothing to do with who's playing on it, or anything like that. Tommy and Eric are fine musicians. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Some people would think that, you know, oh well, you don't like this because of the members of it. And it's not it at all, man. For me, a lot of it has to do with Gene's songs.
Oh, yeah.
I can't listen to Gene. It's almost even like he forgot how to sing. I don't know. It's just weird sounding to me. And, you know, of course I like Modern Day Delilah, right, on there.
Yeah. I think Say Yeah is pretty good.
Say Yeah is good. I like those two songs, but I can't really say too much more. Either you guys like any other songs?
I don't mind Stand. I think that's about the only other one. And I'm an Animal. That's all right, you know. My problem with this record,
Never Enough. I mean, it was kind of like it had like the old school guitar sound, you know, like their style of playing. You know, it sounded a lot like old school Kiss.
Isn't that the one that sounds exactly like Poison though? It sounds exactly like Nothing But a Good Time.
No, I'm not really sure. I've only listened. I can only stomach the album to hear it twice. So.
You know, my problem with this record is, okay, it's kind of weird because I think most people hated Psycho Circus. I know I did. And we wanted it to sound like classic Kiss, right? So however many, what is this, like 11 years later, it's like they finally decide to try to sound like old school Kiss. But to me, it's like I want them to try to do it. But when they did do it on this, it just doesn't feel genuine. I'd much rather them just write from wherever they're at the moment and have that be Kiss, rather than trying to, you know, like, recreate a sound they created 30-plus years ago when they were a young and hungry band, you know?
Well, it's like Joe and I were talking earlier about it. You know, a lot of it, you know, like how Joe was saying, you know, the Gene songs just really suck. I mean, he wasn't even trying. It's like he was just slapping something together and going. Because, I mean, we all have talked about Gene, you know, being the king of the cheesy lyrics, right? I mean, these were, like, overly cheesy. I mean, they were just so
right
bad.
Well, a lot of these songs are old demos of his too, though, you know? And it's like, I just think they should have made a record from their current situation and what they're feeling at the moment, and then it would be Kiss, you know? When you're trying to, like, kind of clone something you did almost, you know, at the time, would have been like 30 years ago or whatever, it just comes off sounding disingenuous, you know? It's like, it sounds like a bunch of people trying to sound like old Kiss, but it's like that old Kiss sound is great on the old Kiss records because it was them being themselves at the time, you know?
I mean, it's just stupid, you know? It's like, let me
it is, yeah.
No, like, I mean, Gene's like, for example, he's like, let me seduce you, my treasure, you know, and feel my tower of power. You know, it's like, what the fuck are you saying, you know?
He's been like that through all of Kiss's career, though.
I know, but I mean, this was really bad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I just think that they were trying too hard to be something they're not anymore, you know, and you can tell right. that it's not right. them anymore. It's just not. But I do think the Paul songs are a lot better than anything else on the record, you know.
But yeah, it still seemed like they were struggling through it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when I got this record, I was already, like, for me, when Psycho Circus came out, it was just like, I was done with Kiss for a while. I just hated it so much. And then it took them 11 years to make another record. So I was thinking, well, this will probably be pretty great, you know. But it just wasn't. I was so disappointed. And, you know, I listened to it that one time, shelved it, listened to it last Sunday because we were going to do this last week. But we all know that that didn't work out. And then I listened to most of it again today. And that's it for me. And I just can't, I probably will never pull this out ever again. Unless we're going to do another podcast about it for some reason, you know.
Well, now, here's something real interesting. D-Rock, what were you saying about the other CD in there?
Oh, the classics.
Right.
You like that?
That they did, like, all their other songs, but with Tommy and Eric, you know, doing them.
I don't like that at all.
I actually kind of did. I mean, I loved hearing Eric, you know, doing Black Diamond. You know, I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. If I want to hear Black Diamond, I'm going to put on the version off of Alive.
Right. But I mean, I'm just saying it was still a great remake, you know, that they did. You know, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I know why I understand why they would want to do it, you know, and all that. But for someone who's, you know, lived his whole life listening to the original versions, these versions just seem pointless to me.
Did the album seem kind of thin to you guys?
Yeah, I think that, well, yeah, but I do think they got a decent guitar tone on it, you know. I think that it's mixed okay and everything. I just think that particular early 70s style just doesn't work in 2009, you know.
Right.
And, you know, kudos to them for trying to give us that classic Kiss sound, because, you know, they know that we love that, and I think they had our best interests at heart, but it just fell flat for me.
Yeah, I just, it's almost like, I don't know, maybe, you know, if they want to do a new record, you know, it's almost like they should bring in a producer.
Yeah, we always mention that.
And, you know, writing, I don't know, it's so hard to discuss because you're not going to, you know, at least as far as we know, you're not going to get Ace in the band to help write. You know, and when they write their songs, are they writing them all by themselves? Or how come they're not, you know, sitting back and going, you know?
Well, this one supposedly was the first record in a while that they actually got in a room and wrote together.
Yeah.
But,
you know, but a producer listens to God of Thunder and goes, oh, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to slow this down, and then we're going to have right. Gene sing it. And then, yeah. You know, and that's an outside person thinking and listening to what's going on and helping make decisions or making decisions, you know. And it's, you know, it's not just Paul, God love him, going, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the man. You're going to listen. We're going to do, you know, right. It's like, but then we get, you know.
Yeah. Nobody's perfect and all that kind of shit.
Because that's kind of like how it is with me and you, Jody, when me and you record, you know, it's like when I'm back there, you know, recording the tracks down, you know, while you're playing or whatever, you know, or whenever I'm playing and you're doing it, you're always like, why don't we try this? Or why don't you do this? You know, right. And, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know, but it's always good to get, you know, a fresh, outside-the-box, you know, opinion, you know, to definitely try to make it better, you know?
Yeah, I guarantee you that if Ezrin would have produced this, half these songs would not have made the cut.
Nope. You know what I mean? They would still be in the studio.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, a producer would do wonders for their records, I think, because if you look at all their greatest records, they had producers. And all the ones that necessarily aren't that great, you know, not that they're terrible, but, you know, something like Animalize isn't nearly as awesome as, like, a Destroyer, you know?
Yeah, they brought in an outside brain, an outside opinion, somebody that doesn't, you know, that somebody that's not going to be offended if a song gets taken off, you know?
Right.
Or changed.
But do you think that maybe Kiss was kind of, if they couldn't get someone classic like Kramer or Ezrin, I think that maybe they might just be a little bit afraid that one of these modern producers would make them sound like every other modern icky band, you know, American Idol style. And so maybe that's why. That's the only reason I could come up with, other than maybe they want to save money, or if it's not that, then it's got to be Paul's ego, you know?
Afraid that somebody's going to try to make them too streamlined, you know, and conform with everybody else instead of trying to have their own sound.
Yeah, I think they should bring a producer. And we, you know, Michael James Jackson, maybe. Somebody.
Yeah, he did great with them.
Yeah, he sure did. But I think, you know, the Sonic Boom, I think a lot of our kind of disdain for it's just the simple fact that where we were as Kiss fans when it came out. If you were 13 and just discovered Kiss and Sonic Boom came out in frickin' Walmart, you would have loved it, you know what I mean? You got the classics to go with it and the crazy DVD. So, I mean, if you were 13 in 2009, you would have loved this shit, I bet.
Yeah.
But being someone that grew up on the old school shit when they were really at the top of their game, this just kind of pales in comparison.
And listen, it's not only Kiss that this happens to, okay? Like, bands like Metallica have been getting chewed up for the last 20 years for everything they put out.
True.
You know, it's true. It's because people start liking a band for a specific reason or a specific album, and then they want that. They don't want the Black Album with their groove. They want Injustice for All or, you know, Master of Puppets. Right. They don't want, you know, Saint Anger. You know, and now that's a double-edged sword, you know, because on one hand, the band deserves to branch out. They should, you know, but then when they branch out and do something, it's like you start dating a girl and every day she cooks you what you want to eat and you eat that every day. And then all of a sudden she comes in the house and she's like, oh, guess what we're having? Fucking liver. And, you know. You know, and then you're upset about it, you know, and she can't understand why. And it's like, well, you've been giving me what I really enjoy every day, and now out of nowhere, liver, you know?
Right.
So that's the thing. And I don't mean to make it seem like Metallica's last few albums have been liver, but what they aren't is filet mignon.
I actually like a lot of the new one, though. Have you heard much of the new one?
I haven't heard any of the new one yet.
It's pretty good.
But I like
the Wired, but I haven't heard anything else off of it yet.
It's better than anything they've done in a while, but it's still no Master of Puppets. You know what I mean? No,
for me, Injustice for All was the last record.
Yeah,
I like the single, Until It Sleeps. I like that single. It's, you know, and I like All Nightmare Long. I like that, a little bit of that album. But still, what were they doing in that album? They were trying to go back to their thrash beginnings. You know, when you listen to All Nightmare Long, it's them trying to recapture their beginnings.
Yeah, and that's what Kiss is doing on Sonic Boom. But if you think about it, the songs that we do like on Sonic Boom don't sound like the classic 70s Kiss.
You know what I mean? No, that's true.
Modern Day does not. So yeah, definitely does not. And I think those are the best ones because it was kind of wherever Paul was, wherever he was at the time, you know? You can't,
yeah.
You could never go back. You know, you always got to go forward. And, you know, I don't have a problem following a band that I like through whatever incarnations, but when they're going backwards and trying to capture something they did 30 years ago, I usually tune out, you know?
Well, you know, I think another problem of that is, too, is, I mean, this was, what, the first album that they did with Tommy, you know? And
well, yeah.
I, you know, that maybe Tommy was still kind of struggling to find his niche, you know, or his style and place, you know, in Kiss. You know, he was kind of trying to struggle with his sound and his sound identity, you know, with the band, you know, because, I mean, you and I have seen him play live, you know, and he nails the old shit, you know, like note for note, you know, and does it perfectly, you know, but...
Oh, not according to Bruce, but that's okay.
Like their own songs... You know, it's kind of like he was kind of struggling, you know, to try to find his style or his place, I should say, musically, you know, with the band, you know.
Yeah, you know, I can't honestly say, and this is my opinion, of course, which doesn't mean shit, but when I was listening to his solo work, it didn't feel like he was trying to be Ace. Did it feel like that to you guys? I mean, you know,
I think he was trying to sound like Ace as much as he possibly could because he knows that's the foundation of Kiss. But yet he was still trying to sound like himself, and I think that, you know, it was just kind of conflicting with each other.
I think that he plays like Ace even in Black and Blue. I mean, you know.
Right. See, that was something else I was going to bring up. Is like, is he really Is he, okay, how about this? Is he really purposefully, while he's in Kiss, trying to sound like Ace?
No.
Or is this just Tommy's influence?
It's totally his influence.
You know, when you listen to Ace, you know, he has a specific style. And, I mean, listen to me play guitar. You know, when my last record came out, the first thing Jody said was, I can totally hear your Ace influence.
Exactly.
You know?
I'm exactly the same way. Like, if me and D-Rock and I record anything, if I play a guitar solo, it's going to sound like Ace. And I'm not going in there saying, I want to play like Ace. It just so happens that he was my biggest influence.
How it comes out.
And I play like Ace because of he was the reason I play guitar. So whatever I do, you're going to pick that up. Same with you. You know what I mean? And same with Tommy.
That's like me when I play the bass in songs, you know, like when we were in Beyond Babylon. You can hear, you know, me trying to get that Gene influence out, you know, in a lot of the songs that we were doing.
Big time.
You know?
So you can't fault the guy for playing like Ace because it could be much worse. He could have been influenced by Eddie Van Halen. You feel me? So I mean, I would much rather hear a guy that grew up cutting his teeth on Ace licks just like I did, you know, and you can't fault him for playing that way because A, it's killer, and B, that's just how he learned how to play. Same as me, same as you, same as D, you know, a lot of people. So I don't have a problem with him playing that way. I thought that on the record, his solos are pretty smoking, you know?
If you go back, and I mean, look, you can even go back and listen to some of that Back in Blue and hear where Kiss took riffs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I think Domino is like a song, I think it's called Dirty Dirty or something like that.
Huh.
You know, and when you listen to it, you're going, oh, man, you know, that Tommy wrote, you know, that song, and now here it is showing up. It's so strange. The first time I heard it on Sirius Satellite Radio, I was like, wow, that really sounds like Domino. And then I looked, and I was like, Back in Blue. Interesting.
Yeah, for me, I was never a fan of, the Black and Blue or anything, but since years have gone past and he, you know, Tommy's in Kiss, I went and checked out some Black and Blue stuff just to see what he was playing like, and he was playing the same. He's playing just like Ace, just like, you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
So people should just leave him alone about that, I think.
Yeah.
But all in all, I mean, I would rather, it may sound crazy to you guys, but I'd rather hear anything that Tommy played on this record over pretty much anything Vinny did in Kiss. solo-wise, you know, guitar solo-wise.
Solos are just all over the place, and let's see how fast I can play. And I mean, you know, Vinny's more of a mystery.
Yeah, he is. Don't get me wrong, I like what Vinny does rhythmically, but I hate his solos, man. His solos are terrible. But it's because he's trying to wank off and show off to everybody.
Right.
You know, if he would just tone it back, it'd be fine. And I will say that there's a couple of Vinny solos that I do enjoy. Like, I like the one on Fits Like a Glove. But in general, I prefer Tommy's style all day, you know?
Yeah, because it is a lot more bluesy. It's
just more of an ace kind of thing, and that's what I'm into, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But I would prefer Bruce's over anything Tommy does as well. Because he has his own thing. Hey, did you watch that Foundations Forum thing I sent you, by the way?
I've watched a bit of it. I haven't had a chance to watch the whole thing yet. It's so great. I have watched the video. Yeah, it's 93. Really good. It's so small.
Yeah. What's crazy, though, you'll have to take a listen to it later or whatever. But Bruce, they're only playing like songs that are like they didn't really play live at the time. So they start with King of the Nighttime World and shit like that. But this is the only time I've ever seen Bruce like completely nail the ace leads like Tommy does. Like he's not even... There's no real Bruce-ism to it. He's just like nailing the ace leads perfectly. It's fucking awesome.
I love that Bruce-ism.
Yeah. You know, because like in an actual Kiss gig, you know, he has his own flavor. But you know, like, you know, he would keep to the general outline. But on this 93 Foundations, he's like totally acing out. And it's so fucking cool, man. It's really cool.
Right. If there, you know, the thing about Bruce is if there's a signature little lick in the solo, he leaves it.
Yeah, it's great.
But the surrounding stuff is usually what he wants to do. And I think that he needed to do that to make it fun, you know?
Well, I think a lot of musicians do that too, you know, as if they're playing a song that's done by somebody else. I mean, if there's a really noticeable, you know, like you called it, a signature part in that song, everybody will leave it in, you know, because that's just... is what's expected, you know, in the song.
Everyone,
you know?
Except Vinnie Vincent.
Right,
well,
yeah.
He's all over the place. But yeah, totally. I mean, people want to hear what they're accustomed to hearing. You know, that's why I like it when I go to see Kiss and Tommy does Bruce solos and Tommy does Ace solos. You know what I mean? That's what you want to hear. At least that's what I want to hear.
So, you know, there's just not too much more you can say about this, except for, you know, one of the obvious things I wanted to say was, do you think that once the album was done, Walmart came and said, well, we don't really like the album? You know, they were putting it out exclusively through them, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think that they said, you know, let's package this in a special way, man, so it'll be worth it, you know? Do, you know, throw these songs in there, put in a DVD? What do you think?
Well, as far as I know, Walmart paid for the records, so they probably already knew going in what they were paying for, you know, what they were going to get. It was probably all in a contract. You get the DVD, right. You get the what was it called in Japan? I can never say that word, but you know what I'm saying, the classics disc. It was a good, you know, a pretty good value for your money, I guess, you know. I remember when I got it, I was thinking, wow, man, two CDs and a DVD, I think it was like, under $20, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I can remember.
Yeah, and you can, and you know, the only bad thing is if you want to buy it now, you gotta find it at Walmart. You know,
well, you can find it online.
Yeah, eBay well, you know, you can't. But you can't like download it off iTunes because you know it's not for sale there. It's only for sale on Walmart.
I think that was a marketing disaster because, like, for someone like me, I hate Walmart. I won't go there if there's any other option to get the same thing that I want, you know?
You know, the cool thing that they did was they did have those Kiss Corners. Remember that?
No. I don't.
Okay. So what Walmart did was they had, it was like a thing called the Kiss Corner, okay? And it was a whole section of the store. And it wasn't a huge section. It was just a nice little, like, it's a store in a store where they had Kiss blankets, Kiss CDs, Kiss posters, all kinds of Kiss stuff. And it was all sold there along. You could get the record, you know, the Sonic Boom CD, and then anything else that came along with you know, in that Kiss corner.
Cool.
I can tell you the things that I remember I did buy. I did buy the Destroyer. There was blankets. I bought the Destroyer blanket. The one I didn't buy was this, like, black and white one where it was just their faces. And, damn, I shoot myself in the, like, face every time. Not every time. But you know what I'm saying? I get so mad every time I see it and think about it on eBay because they're only like $10. It was these fleece blankets, you know?
That's pretty cool. But
that was pretty cool that Walmart stepped up and did something special for the release, you know?
Did they do that with the Monster album also?
I don't think so.
Monster was everywhere.
Yeah. Monster was everywhere.
Didn't Kiss like only do the whole Walmart thing because AC/DC had done it? Like previously,
yeah, I was gonna say something about that.
And it was like
wasn't that the Black Ice album or something?
I can't
like
remember.
That?
It was one of them.
It was like their last album that they came out with.
You know what?
And then,
you know what's crazy about Sonic Boom is that it debuted at number 2, the highest debuting Kiss album ever. Number two.
Do you remember what number 1 was?
No. What was it?
Michael Bublé.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Wow. I can sing though. He can sing.
Yeah, everybody was hoping that it was going to be Kiss's number 1 debut, you know.
Oh, Bublé outsold them and SOULED'd them.
Yeah. You know, I can't listen to him. He reminds me too much of like Harry Connick.
Yeah, it's like middle of the road, easy listening. Not really our cup of tea, but he's good at what he does.
No, but see, the thing is I like Harry Connick. I feel like he's just like, you know.
Yeah, it's good.
Anyway, it's a Harry Connick podcast.
Wouldn't that have been some shit, though, if Sonic Boom was the only Kiss album ever to go to number 1 out of all these great albums they've had, you know? Kind of wild.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Now, you know what? Let's move away from this. I just want to. So, what was the big deal about the cover?
Well, they had the same guy. What's his name? Michael Dorit or something. The same guy that did Rock and Roll Over.
Right. And they were talking about the cover being classic and something that all fans would love. And
I don't know anyone that loves that cover. Do you?
I love that cover. They did change costumes for that tour, right? They did develop a new look, right?
I think they did, yeah. Because before that, they were kind of in the Alive get-ups, weren't they? Like for Rock the Nation and whatnot.
Right, and then after that, you know, and then they kind of went a little Destroyer-esque, a little, you know, mixed everything. And then, you know, it wasn't until Monster Gene put the, like, claw or teeth or spikes on his shoulders or...
Yeah.
But so they did give fans a little something different with their look. They, you know,
I miss the days when they, like, pretty much every album had a new look. Whatever happened to that, you know? Like, Kiss should have new costumes all the time, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been on these costumes since Sonic Boom, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I guess Monster rather.
Yeah. I want to say somebody actually asked, you know what? I didn't tape the whole Q&A that I was at with Gene, and I'm sure that they're... But if I'm not mistaken, I think somebody asked about them doing the Dynasty costumes, and the look on Gene's face was just like, hell no, you know?
Yeah, that's a little rough.
That's rough, you know? I can't imagine poor Eric Singer in that outfit.
I just don't like the capes. Too much. I don't like Paul's purple blouse. It's just not that he takes it off after the second song anyway, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and the capes come off except for Gene's. You know, Ace takes his off. And
the Ace costume's not so bad, but I don't like the Gene one, the aluminum foil demon look.
I was looking at my Viewmaster pictures today.
Now, those are pretty cool.
Yeah, from the Dynasty, that was pretty cool. You know, I'm looking at them and I'm going, these costumes are all right. It just, you know, was...
I was looking at some of that McGuffey Kiss art. He has a great one of the Gene from the Viewmaster where the axe is all in the foreground, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's really
yeah,
cool. Really
awesome. Okay, anything else?
Let me ask you this. Would you guys consider this album an essential Kiss album in your collection?
I already know
the answer, but yeah,
I would
I mean, I don't even have it on my phone, and everything's on my phone.
Right.
Even Peter's solo album's on my phone.
Yeah. Do you consider this... Can you consider this... I guess it's a part of their regular discography, but it's kind of like a... Kind of has its own little thing, because it was only available one place. You know what I mean? It's on like a special record to where it shouldn't even really be counted in the full discography, maybe. Because who knows how many it could have sold if it would have been in record stores, you know?
Well, it's kind of like that. What was that? That Chikara album?
Right. That was the greatest hits, though.
Yeah, but you can't find that anywhere, you know? And it's like, if you do, it's a couple $100. And what was the other one? First Kiss, Last Licks or something like that?
First Kiss, Last Licks, yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's... Depends on who you ask, I guess.
Well, I mean, it was nothing. It was cool because it had Kiss and vinyl, you know, and makeup on another record in the, what was it, the late 80s or early 90s when it came out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, it's nothing you hadn't heard if you're a big Kiss freak, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
This record, though, I mean, I don't really know anyone that's like, I love Sonic Boom. I've never met anyone that has said that to me.
You know, I imagine there are out there. If you're one of those people, write us. Tell us why we're wrong. We're not... Here's the thing. We're not hating on the lineup. We just don't like the songs. The choice, you know. That's really the ultimate thing. Like I said, I like a couple of the songs, and that's really it. Nothing really jumps out at me as, like, you know, like, freak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Whereas, like, you know, I have songs from Monster that are on my iPod. I don't have anything off this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just, I don't know. Maybe it was just where I was at the moment in time. But, yeah, this one just kind of came and went for me. Don't get me wrong. I love Modern Kiss. I think they're great. I think they're great live. You know, like Joe said, it has nothing to do with the lineup. But even if Ace and Peter played on this, I still wouldn't like it if it sounded like this, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't have been happy.
It's just kind of weak, all in all. I will say, though, that I like Eric Singer's voice on the, what's it called? All for the Glory or whatever.
Yeah, man, he's a good singer.
He's great.
He's a good singer, no pun intended.
Yeah.
He's an Eric singer.
Without him, man, they wouldn't sound that great live these days, because he covers a lot of what Paul used to do in the choruses, you know?
Yeah, yeah, he's got it. He's the man.
Definitely. But don't take our word for it. If you've never heard Sonic Boom, it's worth checking out. Maybe if you're a little bit younger, especially. But
yeah. Yeah.
I would say, you know, check it out if you haven't, but I don't think that it's necessarily going to be one of your favorites.
Yeah, if I had to choose between this and, like, Rock and Roll Over, I'm going with Rock and Roll Over.
Well, that's obvious. But definitely. Would you pick this over Monster? What would you do between Cycle Circus, this, and Monster?
I would go with Monster. And then this, and then Cycle Circus.
Really?
Yeah. I agree. But,
not me. I put this at the bottom, Cycle Circus in the middle, Monster on top.
Well, that's just because you just totally despise Cycle Circus. So.
No, I put it in the middle because at least it has the song, the title track. It has Journey of a Thousand. I dig that. And I dig We Are One. So there's three off of that album at least.
How about this, though? If I had a choice to listen to any Kiss album or Sonic Boom, I would still listen to Peter Criss's solo record.
Yeah, I probably would, too.
Sonic Boom. But I could put still their, you know... The song, they had a video for it and everything, you know. I could put that on my phone and listen to it, you know.
Yeah, I think the Modern Day Delilah, that's a decent song.
Yeah, it's a decent song, you know.
Yeah, Paul sounds pretty good. Kind of reminds me of 80s Kiss, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, I think we beat this to death.
You know what I think, though, is like, okay, this was 2009. At that time, all the other rock bands that were doing records were basically... had already sold, like, if you look at a band like, say, what's that band, Fall Out Boy, they used to be kind of punk rock, but in 2009, every single rock band has to have an R&B flavor. They have to have R&B dance beat drums. And at least you can say Kiss still plays rock and roll.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So that's the one positive thing I take away from Sonic Boom, is at least they didn't go fucking dance R&B like every other rock band.
Boom! Boom!
Boom! Boom!
Boom! Boom! Oh, man. Just can't have that happen too many times during the show.
Yes.
All right.
Hi, it's Gene Simmons. You're listening to Podcast Rock City, but you knew that.
Joe, do you got anything to add?
I think you know what I have to add. I'd say thanks for listening out there, Kiss Army. Remember to check us out on Wednesdays, kgfrocks.com, 8:30 Central. No, 8:30 Eastern, rather. Yes. We do a live podcast, Rock City Live. Me and Joe get together. We talk Kiss. We play a bunch of crazy music. And I think you'll really, really like it. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. D-Rock.
I just want to, again, thank everybody for listening. Continue to listen, man, and I'm sure that, you know, we will always have something interesting for you to listen to, and always leave us your comments, too. You know, we'd love to hear what you think.
Absolutely. And I want to tell you that we are big Kiss fans and big Kiss podcast fans, and we listen to them all week long, and you're going to hear the commercials for them right after this show in 3, 2, 1,
peace. You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the Kiss Room. The Kiss Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world.
Kiss!
It's your place for all things Kiss and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The Kiss Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Kistery Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah.
Oh, f-
oh, f-
Lee, come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine G with like a washed up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
And serious.
No, wait. Excuse me, Bob. You're going to come over and do my album.
Kiss Podcast on the web. Kistery Science Theater. We bust balls because we care.
All right, Kiss Army. Since 2007, you've been getting podcast, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
That's right, it's your podcast. Every month, the podcast crew, along with the Kiss Room, brings you Kiss talk like no one else, whether it be roundtables, interviews with the band past and present, analysis, and great Kiss fun.
Hi, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to Podkiss.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Podkiss.
The Podkiss, the Kiss audio fanzine for your ears.
Hey everybody, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
And we're from the Decibel Geek Podcast. And if you love this...
then you'll love us.
That's right. Brand new episode every single Monday. You can find us on iTunes and at decibelgeek.com. And the best thing is, it's rock and roll and it's always free.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and cracking jokes about being a fan? Yes? Then check out Music the Lifeblood, the podcast that goes deep into the core of being a fan, with new music from badass bands, band and genre discussions, along with in-depth interviews from some of punk, metal, and hardcore's titans. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Facebook. Something old, something new, what are you listening to?
Music, the lifeblood.
Baby, you know it's only you and me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all I need. A generation behind. We're going nowhere, and that's just fine.
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare at the moment, my dear. You'll have to come back. Thank you, and
Bye.